Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Network Sunday, June 5th, 2016. This is episode 1294. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of Super Tank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. Epson EcoTank, loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/TechGuy and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/TechGuy. And by TunnelBear. TunnelBear is the simple privacy app that makes it easy to browse privately and enjoy a more open internet. To learn more and get your free TunnelBear, visit trytunnelbear.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, smartwatches, digital photography, travel, using a technology, of course, virtual reality. Got a new phone number. So there's a little issue going on right now with our phone system. Live by the sword, die by the sword, right? Live by VoIP, die by VoIP. Most of the phone systems you use these days are not routed in the same way they used to be. You know, way back when it was Ma Bell, in the earliest days of technology, like the turn of the last century, when you made a phone call, you actually made a physical copper wire connection to the person on the other end. That's why you remember those, seeing those switchboards, and there were operators, mostly women, wearing weird headgear and microphones, and they were sitting at the switchboards, and they'd say, "Number, please." Well, they were actually making a physical connection. They were plugging in a cable, they call it a patch cable, that would connect your phone at your house to Aunt Marge's phone in Missouri. And that was even though it may have been very far away, that was a copper connection all the way down the line. Well, that hasn't been that way in some time, right? And once computer technology, digital technology gained ascendancy in the last 20 years, systems, first thing they did was electronic switching. This didn't have number, please. You just would dial it in, and a big physical box would go and make the copper connection. Nowadays, of course, it's a little bit more sophisticated. We use IP, Internet Protocol. You may have a copper wire coming out of your phone. Increasingly, we don't even have that anymore, but you may have that. That's that jack that is in the wall, the RJ11 jack there on the down on the baseboard that you plug your princess phone into. The princess phone has a microphone in it. Even these microphones are pretty primitive until recently. They were carbon. They were charcoal. That created a very weak but electrical signal from the vibrations of your voice. And that electrical signal would be amplified. Of course, there's a lot of amplifiers along the way. Amplified, pushed down a copper line into that hole in the wall, and then down the copper wire outside your house up to those. Remember those telephone poles on the street? There was still copper wire going down the copper wire all the way to what we call the central office, this big switches there, and copper wire go in there. Well, at some point, they eliminated the copper wire between you and Aunt Marge. Aunt Marge has copper wire, too, to the central office. But the two central offices started talking kind of in a more sensible way over the internet. Not the public internet, but over internet telephony, over a digital backbone. That way, you can get a lot more conversations over the same pipe. You have a lot more sophisticated switching. And you don't need a lot of physical chunk switches to do it. And increasingly, even the copper in your house has been replaced with cabling that is carrying data packets instead of analog voice vibrations, signals. We're slowly moving to voice over internet protocol or VoIP. So when you call this show on that magic number, you may be using a phone connected to copper wire, but eventually it gets into bits, and the bits are routed to us via internet protocol. I think they do use a public internet now, come to think of it. They might. Well, there is a big fiber optic cable, big glass cable with hundreds of strands of glass in between our studios here in Petaluma and the kind of the big switch, the central office up in Santa Rosa. That's the county seat, you know, for Sonoma County up here in Northern California. And I presume AT&T has a fairly big something or other up there. It's all kind of a mystery to me now, right? It's all gotten very fancy. I've been in these switching rooms. They're very interesting. It's all big, just a bunch of computers now. Well, somebody yesterday accidentally, or I don't know, it could have been purposefully.
It was a fire.
It was a fire?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's between us and San Rafael.
San Rafael. Santa Rosa said. Anyway, we're getting more details coming in. So it's down south now to the county seat of Marin County. And I guess there was a fire. I thought maybe a backhoe. There were some incidents of people actually cutting fiber cables as a form of terrorism or protest. That's not the case here. It was an accident. It was a fire. Destroyed that cable and pretty much cut us off from the real world. Yesterday, we discovered this as we began the show, that the phones weren't working. And we actually, you may not have known it because of the deft hand of the folks, Nathan Staten, I call him the musical director, really. He does the whole thing. Nathan Staten down there in Sherman Oaks, California, where the show gets up onto the bird, the satellite. He substituted in some earlier shows. I don't think we'd ever aired them. I think they were recorded but never aired. And so you probably seamlessly, you didn't even notice that I went home that day. Unfortunately, I came back today to find they're splicing like crazy. There's hundreds of strands of glass. And, you know, it's splicing a cable when it's fiber optic is actually a little more complicated, a lot more complicated than if it's copper. So, somebody in the chat room says, the fire is due to the drought. The drought is due to global warming. Wake up to the danger, everyone. I might say that if I were a politician, but I'm not. I'm just the tech guy. So here's what we're going to do. This would be a little experiment in magic telephony. We're not going to have you call us here in Northern California. We're going to have you call Nathan and the Kang in Sherman Oaks. Now, unfortunately, they don't have a toll-free number. Fortunately, they do have somebody to answer the phone. Michael came in to get trained today on how to, you know, run the fancy equipment down there in Sherman Oaks. And Michael, congratulations. You're also going to get trained in answering the phone and screening calls. So let me give you our temporarily new number. Is it okay to give this out, Nathan? Now I'm worried. This isn't Rush Limbaugh's home number or something like that, right?
We rerouted it.
Okay. You know, it's the boss's number. We're just going to take over his office for a minute. So it's two different numbers. You might want to write these down. You know, can we get, Josh, can you put this on the website too, just temporarily so people can refer to it? These are the two numbers. Now, we don't have that fancy radio thing. They call it a rollover that lets us take one line, multiple calls. This is just a regular phone. Well, I know. It's a princess phone on the wall in the studio. I don't know. Michael going to answer it, and we will take your calls and talk high tech. But there's only two of these lines, okay? So if you get a busy signal, and you will, because I think there's more than two people who want to call us today, just hang up and dial again. The best time to dial will be when I conclude a call. The signal there will be goodbye. And I'll rub my nose. When I say goodbye and rub my nose, then call, are you ready? 818-907-0062 or 0624. So the first six numbers are the same. 888-818. It's not toll-free, by the way. Folks, it's not toll-free. Now, that used to matter, right? When you had the operator's number, please, and connecting it, and they had to get a copper wire all the way across the country. That was expensive. They charged you. Remember how much it was? It was so expensive to make a long-distance call. You'd call Aunt Marge and say, I'm calling long distance. Let's make this quick. But I'm presuming most of you have it doesn't matter anymore. 818-907-0062 or 818-907-0624. Say hello to Michael, and we're going to see if this system will work. Thank you for your fast work, Nathan Staten. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Currently, we have a small subset of customers in San Rafael. We're working on with our cable vendor to get services restored. We'll update. This is so Sonic is just one of many people that use this fiber. We're actually not on the Sonic network. We're on a different phone network, Telepacific. Update. There was a cable cut between Petaluma and San Rafael. Our cable vendor has a cable on the way with replacement fiber. That was yesterday, 12:23 p.m., and is working to locate the exact area where the cut is. No estimated ETR at this time until they can locate the exact spot. 4:08 p.m. yesterday. Our cable vendor is out on site working on the issue. Still no ETR due to the size of the cut. Ooh. 8 p.m. Another cable is being brought out to the affected area. Still no ETR at this time. It's been stated the cause of the cable cut was an electrical fire. We will update. 11 p.m. I should have been watching this. Why wasn't I watching this? I could have stayed home. The cable is in place. 11 p.m. last night. The splicing team is about ready to start splicing the 216-count fiber cable. That's it. 11 p.m. 8 a.m. Splicing has gone on throughout the night. 216 fibers. And it is continuing. No ETR. I don't know what ETR is. It's estimated time of restoral repair. Officially, though they expect, hopefully, hope shouldn't come into this, to have things starting to come back around late this afternoon. Wow.
So,
wow.
I was sending you emails as I was getting updates.
I'm sorry. Why didn't I look at my email? Because I was asleep.
I was up most of the night.
Were you following this? Thank you, John. Thank you, John. You're a good man.
Hey, Leo.
Yeah. Whoops. Is that good or bad?
It's great.
Whoa.
We'll load like three or four of them up here for you and keep the
lines. Wow. Apparently, those are rollover lines. Wow. Kim, you don't have to sit there. You're on duty.
I'm entertained.
You're at your station, prepared, should it be necessary.
I know. I'm like, has anybody actually turned on the phones and see if they worked?
Yes. No, we called them.
Okay.
It's kind of a funny, I want to post this somewhere. Wow. It's kind of an interesting story. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, but you just call me the Thunder. From the motherboard. 88. Oh, no. What happens when you call that number? You just get probably a fast pass tone.
I heard it was a beep.
It's a beep or something. I've been reading the trouble report from SonicNet, which is one of our providers, is also on this fiber optic cable. They're not our phone provider, but they're on the fiber optic cable, too. And the cable cut apparently was announced 12:23 p.m. yesterday. The cable vendor has cable on the way with replacement fiber and is working to locate the exact area where the cut is. No estimated time of repair at this time until they can locate the exact spot. Then 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, they're on site working on the issue, but due to the size of the cut, no estimated time of repair. Then at 8 p.m. last night, another cable's being brought out. It's been stated the cause of the cable cut was an electrical fire. At 11 o'clock last night, more than 12 hours ago, The cable is in place. The splicing team's about ready to start splicing 216 individual fibers. That is a lot of fiber. One glass fiber, I've been told, is enough to carry all the telephonic traffic in the United States on Mother's Day. One. We got 216 in there. That gives you some idea of how much data is transmitted now. So they started splicing around midnight last night. Splicing has gone on all through the night. They didn't stop. Continues. They hope to have it back in a few hours from now. So more than 12 hours. It's amazing. It's amazing. Very impressive. But thanks to our great team back in the Sherman Oaks facility, Michael and Nathan, we've got some calls. Let's start with Lane from Huntington Beach. Hi, Lane. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Line one. Hey, Lane, how you doing?
Hey, Leo. Good morning.
Good morning. You have an appropriate call, actually. Your question.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking for a home VoIP solution, something that maybe could integrate an iPhone app, like Uma, or maybe 8x8, but 8x8 is more for business.
Yeah, I used 8x8 when they first came out. It was pretty impressive. And of course, voice over the internet has really improved over time. So there's lots of good solutions out there right now. Uma and 8x8 are kind of designed for people who they want it to be invisible. They want to use the internet for their phone, but they still want to kind of use a regular phone. Actually, 8x8 for a while had video phones early on, too. This was years ago. Uma, though, same idea. Uma plugs into the wall, into your internet, and then acts as a regular phone switch, so you can use regular phones in there. Is that what you want?
That's what I want.
Because if you just say in your iPhone's already connected to the data network. So your iPhone
have an app maybe that you could forward phone calls to and answer calls on your iPhone.
Yeah. So what you want is something called a SIP, S-I-P, app. SIP is the front end to the VoIP network. So it stands for signaling... Session Initiation Protocol. If you think about it, in order to begin a phone call, you have to do something to signal that and connect to the internet and then find your endpoint, the person you're calling. So that's what the SIP does. So there are many SIP applications available. And in fact, 8x8 and Uma, I think both are SIP phones. That means they can be used with internet protocol calling. So I don't have a particular preference. Generally, what I do when I'm using my iPhone is I'll use Skype or Tango or Viber or one of the many VoIP solutions. SIP would require that you have a provider, a SIP provider on the other end. So your phone would then be connecting with another company that provides voice over the internet telephony services. So you not only have to have the application on your phone, you now have to have a deal with somebody to provide those services. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'll give you an example of a good choice that a lot of us use is something called Obihai, O-B-I-H-A-I. And what it does is it gives you the ability to use regular phones. It does the SIP, session initiation stuff, but you still have to have a provider that it connects with. In fact, a lot of us started using it because Obihai would work with Google Hangouts and give you free calling via Google. Google was the VoIP provider, and the Obihai was the SIP hardware, in this case it was hardware. So I'm not sure how you would do it with an iPhone. Your iPhone would have to connect via the Wi-Fi in your house to a box that was also connected to the network that would actually do the initiation and calling. So I'm gonna leave this open to our chat room and see if anybody has... Uma does have an iPhone app. Because if you think about what Uma does, Uma's pretty cool. Uma does a lot of sophisticated stuff. Uma's a box. You connect to the internet. And it does, it's a SIP box. And it also is a provider, but what it's doing is it's a provider using peer-to-peer networking. So UMA works better the more people have UMAs. I was slow to recommend UMA when they first came out because it was expensive and it was still unproven. And not, you know, everybody, once you have a million UMA owners, hey, this is a great network. So it was one of those kind of catch-22s. But I think that they've been around long enough and they've built enough of a network now that they're probably a good choice. So is there, you mentioned UMA. Is there a reason you don't have UMA?
There's no reason. I'm just starting to think about an option.
Yeah.
For a home phone.
Yeah. So, UMA's a little expensive because you buy that hardware that plugs into the internet. I don't know. I mean, let me look and see how much it is. I haven't looked yet. It's $100. That's not that bad. That's really not that bad. So what you're buying is a box that connects to your internet, and then you can connect a phone to or use your iPhone app and connect to it, that box, and you'll get all of the benefits of VoIP. Now, it's ironic that you call because our VoIP solution is down because somebody cut the cable. And that's the negative on VoIP is look, somebody could cut your phone cable too, right, your copper cable. But because the phone system was set up over many decades with heavy government supervision and designed for reliability, it was a pretty reliable network. And once it got deregulated, I think it's probably no more reliable than any other VoIP solution. But remember, if your internet goes down or your power goes out, your UMA will no longer work. A phone connected to a jack in the wall and not to your power, but just to the jack in the wall, will, if it's the right phone, will continue to work because the phone company provides the power, again, because of decades of government regulation. I think everybody I know who has UMA says this is a great solution. So let's go with UMA, okay? Let's try that.
Thanks, Lou. I appreciate
it. Appreciate the call. And let me know how it works for you. I'd be very curious. Thanks, Lane. Goodbye. Well, it turns out we do have a rollover. So we have William coming up from Anaheim and Brad from Palmdale. But first, it's a surprise appearance. Johnny Jett joins us from somewhere around the world to help us with our travel. Stay tuned. So let's do some fiber splicing. So there's your fiber splicer. You put in the line of fiber right there. Put it in carefully. You don't want to make any mistakes. And then your Sumitomo Electric Zik. Wow, there's a little bit of glass. See the glass? Look at that. What is this guy at the county fair doing this? 216 times 2, that's what you got to do, right? Because they've got a big gap, right? So it's 432. They get. Pair is a word that goes back to copper, right? Yeah. Yeah. Unless they have a send and receive fiber, I don't know. I think it's fibers. Look at this. Single fiber cleavage. So he's cleaved the fiber. Now you don't want to. You can't. You gotta be careful because you can't crack the glass or damage it in any way. Okay, now you got the two ends. Got to very carefully put them together. I don't know how you. What do you tape them? How do you get them together? Okay, now you put your Zik there. And now what's he gonna do? He's got a. The Zik has a display. Is it melting it? What is it doing? Wow. Wow. Look at that. Look at that. He's actually looking at it under a microscope. Okay, they're butted end to end. But how do they, what are they using to join it? It says remove fiber. I guess it's done. And now, ladies and gentlemen, look at that. He glued it together with chewing gum. But wait, he's not done. The heck, Nick? What's next? This guy's like at the circus. Hey, Johnny Jett.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Good.
You're home. I like that.
I am. I was on the... I landed yesterday, and people were like... I saw my Twitter. People were like, I'm listening to you on the radio right now. I'm like,
yeah, it was confusing. I apologize.
That's okay. I was like, I don't think so, unless there's an imposter.
Yeah, well, you heard what happened, right?
I just heard a little bit.
Yeah, our fiber got cut or burned. Damn. And so there's the guy splicing it right there.
Holy cow.
Unfortunately, there's 216 of them.
Wow.
And this took him about 10 minutes for each of them, so it's going to take a while. They've been splicing all night.
So, well, it was great for me since I was on the radio and wasn't really on the radio.
Yeah, you got double expose you. So welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got all these tweets about somebody saying, you don't understand the Constitution. I'm thinking, I don't know. What did I say?
Uh-oh.
I don't remember where that recording came from.
Yeah, I think I was in Europe, they said.
Huh, but that doesn't
matter. I was like, I'm definitely not in Europe. I just landed in Los Angeles.
Narrow it down too much. All right. You got an app and you got a site, right?
I do.
All right. I got to splice my own fiber here.
And my mouse is acting up, and I deactivated my touchpad. So now I'm using my touch screen on the computer is how I'm navigating.
If it works, it works. He's still, by the way, he's still doing the core alignment fusion splicing. Jeez. Holy cow. There's Johnny Jett. And unusually for Johnny, he's home.
Nice to be home. I just got in yesterday.
Home for you is a vacation, right? That's your vacation, going home.
Exactly. Although I have so much work to do. I got to catch up writing on my stories. Last week I left off from my home state of Connecticut. Then I flew to Minnesota for a conference. And then I flew to Colorado to go to another conference. Wow. And now I'm here.
Well, welcome home.
Thank you.
Johnny joins us each week to talk travel, and particularly, because this is a tech guy show, about how to use technology to travel better. What do you got for us?
So one of my friends from actually, she's a big listener of yours, Jen Leo from the LA Times, turned me on to this tool. So you have to go into Google and type in Time Magazine or Money Magazine's vacation cost finder.
Ooh.
They don't have a good URL, which is ridiculous. It's a long one. That's why I didn't give it to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this will help people who don't really know where they want to go. But it asks you all kinds of questions like, do you want to go on a domestic or international trip? Do you want to go to the beach or to the city or on an adventure? And then it'll have all different categories on how much money you want to spend, you know, between $1 sign and four. And then it'll show you on the map, you know, the destinations that are available. And you just click one of those flags and it will then break it down to what it would cost you. So, for example, I put in Jacksonville, Florida. And it was $148.62 a day, and that includes like $101 for the night for the hotel, and then for an inexpensive meal, and how much the taxi would cost. So it kind of gives you a good idea of what a vacation would cost, although their choices are very limited.
You could go to any one of these places and spend a lot of money or a little money. I mean, one of the less expensive places is Mumbai, India. Well, you could also, you know, make that a very expensive visit. So
without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the one problem I have with it. But actually, when I was digging down a little bit deeper, one of the websites they use to pull that information is called Numbeo, Numbeo.com. Uh-huh. You know this guy?
No, I'm looking at it now, though. This is crowdsourced, which I like because that means you're getting information from travelers every day.
And it started back in 2009. This is a Serbian guy. And it's billed as the world's largest database of user-contributed data about cities and countries worldwide. And what I love about it is that you can compare any two cities on how much it costs to live there, which is really important for travelers if you're even just going to visit or if you're going to live for, you know, to move there.
There are increasing number of people like my friend Mike Elgin who are kind of permanent travelers, right? They've given up their homes and they live on the road.
As I said, I just came from two travel conferences. You would be shocked at how many people said when I asked them where they're based, they're like, I'm nomadic.
I love that.
And that's
idea.
All they do. They just live around the world. And so this website, so I put in New York and Bangkok just to compare the prices, and you can see the huge differences of what it costs, you know, between housing, healthcare, traffic, food. So it's a really cool website, especially if you're going to places that you're not familiar with and internationally, but they have, I can't remember the exact amount of cities they do, but it's like 100,000 or more.
Numbeo. It's like number with an O instead of an R.com.
Right. Correct.
Wow. That is a neat idea.
Yeah. You should try and compare a couple cities. San Francisco and a couple other ones, and you'll be it's really interesting to read.
That's neat. By the way, my friend Mike's page is becomingnomad.com. He's a longtime tech reporter. We've known Mike for a long time, have the highest regard for him. And he just came back from a month in Cuba with his wife, Amira, and now they're living in Mexico. It's a really, really neat idea. And, of course, if you want to find out how to do this, there's a lot of information being exchanged by people who live this way. We have a listener whose name is oddly Winton Churchill, who does, I think, a podcast on this as well. It's a big area.
I mean, you would again. It's there's so many people who are doing this, and I, you know, my dream, by the way, would be to live in different places every month, just going around.
Yeah,
but that's not going to happen now that I have a child on its way. But
congratulations! by the way, Winton's page is barefootconsultants.com. The fun and freedom of global earning. It's how to make a living wherever you are, which I think is
good. And by the way, you can travel with a kid all around. I have friends that do it. I know an Australian couple that have two kids, and the kids are under three, and they've been to 30 countries already.
Yeah. So, we have. I have a friend, a family I know. When the kids were little, they got a sailboat, and they just took a couple of years to sail around the world with the kids. Not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
I think most of the people who do this after the kids are out of the house.
But I know people who do that too.
Yeah.
You couldn't pay me to do that. Anyway, I got an app for you too.
Yes, sir.
So this one is called Prepare for Impact. So
is this what a meteor finder? What is this?
It shows you the statistics and how to save your life if you're in a car in a plane crash.
Oh my goodness, there is such a thing?
There is, and actually it's an Italian app, but it actually has some high ratings. It's on iOS and Android. What? It's free.
You don't want to watch this before you get in a plane, do you?
No, so that's why I haven't actually mentioned it. I wrote about it a while ago, but I've been waiting to a time where I'm not getting on a plane right away and I'm not flying this week.
This actually comes from a university.
It does.
University of Udine in Italy.
But again, you know, I used to be afraid to fly. You couldn't get me on a plane. I was actually afraid to leave the house at one point.
Right.
And
so
then
this
I started
is not
reading
something
this...
you should watch.
Oh no, my. And actually I haven't watched it, to be honest with you, because I'm afraid of it, but I heard so many good things about it.
Don't look at the TV because I'm playing the video right now.
I see it. But my friends, I started reading all kinds of stats on how safe it is to fly. That's how
right.
I got one of the ways
That's
I got
right.
over my fears.
That's right.
11 million and one. Actually, if it's 11 million and one odds of dying in a car accident. Actually, sorry, in a plane crash.
Accident.
In a car accident, it's 5,000 to 1.
Wait a minute. It's 11 million to 1 in a plane, 5,000 to 1 in a car?
Exactly.
Wow, I wish I could fly to work.
Well, I landed one time on a British Airways flight in LA, and the pilot got on the horn and said, "Okay, the safest part of your journey is now over.
Yeah.
Drive carefully.
Good luck on the roads." Wow, that is a stunning statistic.
But that app, the good thing about that app, it does teach you, like, you know, count the exit rows, you know, when you're sitting, so you know where the door is.
So you can feel your way to the exit.
You do, because even if the plane crashes, God forbid, there's still plenty of survivors.
Okay, maybe I don't know. I guess I should do this. But I don't even read the card in the back of the seat when I get on the
plane. Well, you got to read that. I mean, you know, I have to remind myself every time I fly, listen to the flight attendant. You know, the problem is it starts off with, like, how to put the seatbelt on. And then you're like, oh, my God.
They should start
down.
With the hard stuff first.
They should.
Here's what to do if we're underwater.
Yes. Do pay attention.
Oh, man. All right. The app is called Prepare for Impact. It is a free app. It's from the HCI lab in Udine, which is a university in Italy. Pretty cool, based on their own research and study. So it's not a frivolous app. It's a serious app.
Yeah, it's
wow, Johnny Jet, you really brought me down, man.
I know. I'm sorry. I've been holding off on it, and I was like, you know,
no,
what?
No, this is good. It's like I do the Carbonite ads, right? You have to. Doesn't mean a disaster will happen. It's just good to be prepared.
And then my dad asked me about, like, the Egypt air crash recently. I'm like, listen, I don't know much about it because I don't like to read about that stuff.
Yeah. I don't blame you. Johnny Jet, johnnyjet.com. He'll probably be on a jet any day now, so be nice to him. But he's home for a little bit with his wife, and their baby is on the way. When are you due?
Not till October.
October. Okay.
My wife's like, let's get the nursery ready. I'm like,
she's nesting. Oh, boy, the fun begins. Johnny, always a pleasure. Go to johnnyjet.com for his free travel newsletter. He's got lots of stuff there. It's free. It's all free. Do you charge for anything? I don't think so.
No, I don't. But there are actually, so I'm going to send out a deal right now. There's a really good business class deal, $1,500 to Europe.
JohnnyJet.com. Get it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Do you have to go on a plane?
Yes.
Can I walk?
I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't mention that app because I don't want people to get scared. It took me a while to get over it.
No, it's appropriate. You try right or wrong actions. I think this is good. So it's kind of a – this is a great idea. I like this. I'm going to download it and do it. It's good
I downloaded it. I'm just afraid to open it up.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you on that. But I'm installing it right now.
All right. Good.
I think I don't know. I think most of us are fatalistic, figuring, hey, if the plane's going to crash, it's going to crash. What, you know, the chances of survival after it crashes aren't great, but they are.
I'm now more scared in a car. And I was in Colorado and I was driving from Denver to Snowmass the other day, and my driver was going 89 in a van. I'm like, whoa. I'm tracking it on Glimpse.
Cars terrify me.
And we're going by a sign that says, you know, drive slow. There's been so many fathers, sons, daughters killed in the last year or so on this road. I'm like, listen, I'm having a baby coming on its way. I want to see my baby. And the woman looked at me, was driving like, are you a wimp?
Jennifer, whenever we would, my ex-wife, whenever we would travel, especially in Latin America or Mexico, she would say, más despacio, which means slower. That was her, más despacio.
She's smart. You know, you got to speak up. And and that's one of my travel tips, by the way. Don't be shy to speak up.
Yeah.
Just say, please slow down. We're not in a hurry. By them going 20 miles over or whatever, you're only going to get there 20 minutes
ahead of time. Yeah, it doesn't make that much of a difference. Yeah.
So tell these guys to slow down.
Slow down. Más despacio.
All right, Leo.
Thanks,
Johnny.
Have a great week. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate
it.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
So go ahead. Pick up the revolutionary
Más despacio. I say that to Lisa all the time. Super tank printer with years of ink. Lisa teases me. She says things like, so we're gonna drive to Newport Beach for vacation. We're driving down. And she says, oh, I'll get us there 2 hours faster. I have lunch. Thank you. Yeah. She said, I'm driving. Más despacio. She says, I'm an excellent driver. I said, I know. Más despacio. Our show today brought to you by Epson, the makers of those amazing Epson Eco Tank printers. We have, of course, nothing but Epson printers at home. I've been using Epson since my first computer. In fact, I had an Epson computer. Oh, I loved my Epson computer. But Epson printers, they've been around since the beginning of the computing era. And, of course, it makes sense that that's where a lot of innovation would be happening. And now with this newest EcoTank, I got to tell you, Epson has just done it again. What's the idea here? Well, first of all, these are great all-in-one printers with the Precision Core engine. That means you're going to get really a great printing experience. They're very fast. 40 million drops of ink a second. 40 million. Black text, vibrant colors, two-sided printing, no warm-up time, all the advantages. But now add the EcoTank printer to that, and man, you have a winner. Take a look at this. Is the Epson ET4550. There's a whole line of EcoTank printers, but the ET4550 comes with bottles of ink in the box. No more cartridges. There's enough ink in here for about 50 ink cartridges. That's about 2 years of printing. 11,000 black pages, 8,500 color pages. Lisa got this. It was very easy. You put the ink in the tank and that's it. And I haven't added ink since. And when you do add ink, when it is time for no more ink, you're going to save huge, up to 80% on inks because of their low-cost replacement bottles. Or if you get the workforce for the work group, instead of bottles, you're going to use these ink packs. These super tank printers are amazing. Amazing. For home, for office, for giant work groups. Epson.com/EcoTank to learn more. The Ecotank, the one we bought, the 4550 wireless all-in-one printer, won the CES 2016 Innovations Award. And rightly so. Rightly so. Thank you, Epson, for changing the whole experience. They print wirelessly, of course, from your smartphones and tablets, too. And Epson has just released their own app, a creative printing app that makes it easy to preserve your Instagram and Facebook photos, make personal photo collages, custom greeting cards, stationery, coloring book templates. How cool is that? And by the way, you can print photos directly onto DVDs and CDs. This is really cool. Epson.com/EcoTank. Epson, exceed your vision. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we're using a special phone number today because the fiber was cut. It connects us to the outside world. They're splicing as fast as they can. I watched a video on YouTube. Thanks to the chat room for passing along a video. Splicing fibers, very tricky, delicate stuff because, of course, it's glass. And, you know, you can't do anything to slow down the data transfer in the glass, you know. Ideally, fiber would never be cut at all, but there was an electrical fire and... They're splicing as fast as they can, but that has to be done very, very carefully. So our number today is 818-907-0062. That's what William from Anaheim called. Hi, William. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Good to hear from you.
Thanks for calling.
Been a long time listener.
Thank you.
My question was this time, excuse me, I have about a year and a half year old phone. It's an LG D14, or 415.
Mm-hmm.
It is a true smartphone, but it only had 8 gigs of memory, and I thought that would be enough. But when you try to put more apps in it other than, like, 4, it says it's full. So I thought I'd go out and buy an SD card to give it more memory, but it's fine to put more photos and music on, but it doesn't seem to be allowing me to put apps on it.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you knew of any way to get the SD card to be used as memory for
right.
the phone for apps.
So this is an Android issue, and it happens on a lot of Android phones, and it's a more of a problem with older versions of Android than newer ones. Which version of Android is on your phone? Do you know?
Well, I'm using Lollipop.
Lollipop.
Let me get up to Marshmallow.
Yeah, that's as far as it'll go. So the issue with apps on the SD card is it can be confusing for the operating system and for the app. For sure, you can't put any app that has a on-screen widget on your SD card. But in Lollipop, you should be able to move some apps to your SD card, which would help a little bit. The way to find out is to go to the settings and the apps setting and look at each app individually, and there is, if it's possible to move that app, a button that says move to SD card. So some apps will. The problem is this doesn't really save you a lot of space. Apps aren't all that big. What uses up space is pictures, music, video, if you have it. That's much bigger than apps. And so what you generally want to do is make sure that when you take a picture, for instance, your camera app is saving it to the SD card. And almost all camera apps, especially on Android, and this actually all applies to Android. On the iPhone, there are no SD cards, so it doesn't matter. But on Android, almost all Android camera apps, there is a setting, if you dig deep enough, that says save images to the SD card. SD cards are slower than internal memory. And so in some cases, for instance, burst mode, the camera can't save to the SD card and won't. But that would help a lot. Save your pictures and movies to your SD card. Some music apps will allow you to store the music on the SD card. That'll help a lot, too. But, yeah, I generally tell people don't get an 8-gig phone. In fact, I think it's a shame that companies still sell 8-gig phones. Even Apple was selling 8-gig phones. The rumor is that they're going to start at 32 gigs in the fall with their next iPhone, and I think that's appropriate because it's surprising how much you can fill up these phones with. The new operating system, Marshmallow, which replaces Lollipop, has something called adopted mode, which actually makes the SD card look like internal memory. And if your manufacturer allows that, LG does not on its G5, unfortunately. But if your manufacturer allows that, then you don't have to worry about this at all. It'll just do it. So There you go. Just take a look and see if the app, you can actually sort those apps by size. That's probably the best thing to do. And then take the biggest apps, which will be game apps, and see if there's a button to move to SD card. There are programs that will do this. Android, you know, downloadable programs. Don't recommend them. I don't recommend them. It's funny. This is challenging. Even I remember when Windows Phone, I guess it was 7, came out. The hardware supported SD cards, but Microsoft said, "Nah, but you better not use them." It was challenging for them to be able to do it. And I think one of the problems is people take them out. So you don't want to move too many resources over the SD card, because if the user just pops it out for some reason, the card fails, you don't want the whole operating system. You don't want the phone to stop working. That would be kind of a disaster. So yeah. Briefly, Google said no more SD cards. And by the way, none of the Google phones have SD cards anymore. But and last year, Samsung and LG and all the others abandoned SD cards. Now they've brought them back because people say, no, we want to have removable storage. We want to have expandable storage. SD cards are cheap. I just bought a 200 gigabyte micro SD card, and it was like $50. That's great. You can get a lot of extra storage, and there's some real convenience there. But it does challenge the operating system. So that's the reason. So check in your settings, William, and see if you can do it. I thank you for the call. Brian Palmdale, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian. Is he still there? Line. There we go. Hey, Brian.
You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now. Thanks.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. So my situation is I got a wedding coming up next weekend, and unforeseen circumstances, we had to kind of cut back on certain things, and one of the things that we had to sacrifice was a professional photographer. So
fine. You know what? Can I tell you something?
Yes.
Fine. That's the good thing to sacrifice. Don't sacrifice the ring. No. I'm sure your bride-to-be already has the dress. Can't sacrifice that. Photographer is expendable.
Yes.
I remember my first wedding, we actually had people bring food. And what we did is we put, and this was how long ago this was, we put disposable cameras on every table. And then as people left, they put the disposable cameras in a bag, and we brought them all in. And we didn't need a wedding photographer. But nowadays, everybody's got a camera with them, their smartphone. So what you really want to do is set it up so that when people take their pictures, you get them, right?
Right, and that's exactly what we're doing. Grandma is doing that and getting us disposable cameras on every table and all that stuff.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Grandma. That's awesome. You know what? It's better this way. A little.
I listen to your show religiously, and so, you know, I'm kind of learning the tech stuff and all that. And
so
and
a couple of ways to do this. Facebook, of course, has the Moments app. And now this would everybody at your wedding will be on Facebook probably. I mean that's kind of the most universal thing. So you could create a Facebook album and have people could share it to it, or they can put this Moments app on their phone and actually share pictures with you. So that's one way to do it. Google has a great solution, which is you create a Google album that's a shared album that everybody can upload to. So that's another way to do it. I was at a wedding. My friend Mike Elgin's son got married, Kevin and Nadia, and they had a hashtag. And I would strongly recommend you do that and put that up at strategic positions. Hashtag our, you know, whatever your names are, wedding, so that when people share your wedding on social media, they all use the hashtag. That makes it easy for you to find it. So there are lots of ways to do this. We'll talk more in just a sec. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, Google Spaces is interesting. So the question is, do you want to have people install apps or not? We'll talk. I'll talk some more after the break at the top of the hour here. many wedding photographers are mad at me right now. I have a lot of friends who are wedding photographers, but I mean, if you can't eliminate the preacher, you can't really. I mean, flowers. I guess you could eliminate flowers. If you have a musician or a choir, you could eliminate them. You could food. You could have make it a potluck. right? I think weddings should be inexpensive. I don't. I see people spend so much money on weddings, and it's better if it's a communal, like a community effort, you know, like a barn raising. Don't you think?
That's how my parents got married. It was totally a potluck.
Oh, it was so cool.
In like a room at a church.
And... Yeah, my dad was in charge of bread. So he brought like 800 loaves of bread. Another family's in charge of salads. They brought garbage bags full of salad, lettuce, right? It was really fun. And we had a bunch of lasagnas from Safeway or somewhere, Costco.
Yeah.
It was really fun. Now, when I married Lisa, the way we saved money is we didn't invite anybody.
It was just the two of you.
Yeah. Just the two of us and a preacher. And that we eloped. That's another way to save money. We did have a photographer.
$50,000 for a house. Thank you very much.
Yeah. No, weddings can be very expensive. Weddings can be so expensive. So if you can afford it, it's nice having a photographer. And we did have a photographer, and we got great pictures. But that's because we didn't have any guests. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. This is the show where we talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, augmented reality, all that jazz. Phone number's different today and today only because there was a fiber optic cable fire. The cable that connects us to the rest of the world is being spliced even as we speak, but it's still down, so we're using a number out of our satellite network operation center. It's 818-907-0062. And thank you, Michael, for doing a great job answering. I just want to wrap up because Brian from Palmdale, he's getting married, but there was some cost cutting and they couldn't afford the photographer, and he wants everybody who's coming to the wedding to take pictures. Grandma's bringing disposable cameras. That's great. Most people will have, not maybe the older crowd, but the younger crowd will all have smartphones. And you just want to make sure you encourage them to take pictures. And the hashtag is your friend. I want to say that again. Kevin and Nadia's wedding, they had a hashtag, I can't remember what it was, Kevin and Nadia's wedding probably. And they encouraged everybody who took pictures, whether they posted it on Facebook or Instagram or Google or wherever they posted it, Twitter, to use hashtag Kevin and Nadia's wedding. And by doing that, is in a way, it's saying, here's the search term. You can use this search term and find these pictures. So Kevin and Nadia, Kevin's a programmer, so he's pretty sophisticated. He was able to go and find all those pictures. But I love the idea of saying, hey, we've got this album. I think Google Plus or Google Photos is probably going to be the best way to do it. Somebody in our chat room said he's tried a number of them and found that Google Photos was the easiest to use. And one of the things that I was concerned about is, do you have to have a Google account to do it? And you do not. You do not. So that means Abuelito does not have to set up a Google account. She can take her phone and just send it to an address, and it will automatically get shared in that album. The nice thing about that is you create this album as a public album that anybody can upload to. The nice thing about that, or you can invite people too if you want to kind of restrict it a little bit. But that means that not only do you get to see all the wedding pictures, but everybody else does. You have an album, and it's a public album. So I think that's a great way to do it that doesn't require people to go out and add software or even really do much different. So thank you for the suggestions from the chat room. We're going to move on as we continue. Our next call comes to us from Buena Park, California. Leo on the line. Hi, Leo. Leo, it's Leo.
He should be.
Leo, can you hear me?
Moving on.
All right, we'll move on to JJ from San Francisco. Hi, JJ.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome to the show. How can I help you?
Hey, sir. First of all, long-time supporter of the Twit Network, Brick, Mug, so I appreciate everything you do.
You bought a Brick. You bought a Mug. Thank you for your support. I really appreciate it. Twit's the podcast network. This show is on Twit, but we have many other tech shows there, too, at twit.tv. Thanks for the plug.
Well, fortunately, I have the Philips Hue system, and I love it. But last night, I think my night owl landlord, who we share the same circuitry, 1:30 in the morning, I woke up and I thought I overslept. And
I know exactly what happened.
Yeah, all the lights were full turned on. And for the next 30 minutes, I thought we were having power surges. And then it was him on the breaker, and I finally confronted him. My landlord, I was, you know.
What was he doing? Was he trying to get you out of the house?
I think he's a night owl. I think he and his girlfriend were messing with some appliance, so they were having electrical problems.
Oh, my goodness. But I discovered the same problem. So, Hue, I love these Hue lights. They're from Philips. They're LED fixtures. They're expensive, but on the other hand, LEDs last a really long time. So $60 for a light isn't the end of the world. But what's cool about them is they're not just one color, as most light bulbs are. They have red, green, and blue LEDs in there. And they're on the internet, which is really wild. They have a Wi-Fi connection in each one. And that means you can tell them to be any color in the rainbow. So with the Hue app, you can even take a picture and say, I love the colors in this sunset, and I want to duplicate that feeling in my house. And you touch, you know, with an eyedropper, the picture colors you want, and that's the light color. It's remarkable. But you found, and this is why I took my Hue bulbs out, you found the flaw. And we got to get Philips to wake up to this. If the power goes out to your Hue light and then comes back on, so does a Hue light, full bright white. So don't put it in your bedroom.
Yeah, it felt like I overslept. I thought it was in the middle of the afternoon. And,
we're lying in bed, my wife and I. It is the middle of the night. The lights come on really bright. I guess we had a short power outage. And I, being the idiot that I am, start fumbling for my phone to find the Hue app to turn it off. Lisa got up and flipped the switch. It's a very bad idea. Don't have them in your bedroom. I guess if it went on in your living room, it wouldn't be the end of the world. But I do think that's a flaw, and I don't know of any way out of it. That's just part of Hue.
Forums are just saying, you know, write Philips about it, and maybe if enough of us make a stink. They're citing it's a safety precaution, but I guess there's no hack.
Oh, that's interesting. So they know it, obviously, and they decided not to fix it because I guess that makes sense. You, if the power does go out, you would want those lights to come on full bright, wouldn't you?
That's what they're citing as safety
measures. Wow. Isn't that ridiculous?
Not really practical. I mean, we've dealt with outside of Philips, when there's a power outage, you can control what light you want turned on if you just simply leave the switch on.
Right. Well, that's what I guess you could do, although most of the value of the Hue lights is using things like If This Then That, that great IFTTT website, to program the lights. So, for instance, a lot of people use them in the bedroom and have a setting that when the sun comes up or when my alarm is supposed to go off, you slowly bring the light up, and you could even make it, and I've done this, sunrise colors, so it feels like you're outside and the sun's coming up, and it's a very natural way to wake up. But
yeah,
no good if there's a power outage. I guess you could put the lights on an interruptible power supply or something. Very frustrating. I understand now that that's a safety concern, so What are they going to do? They don't want to take the liability of doing anything else. Be nice if they allowed you to program that. Maybe they will someday. I don't know of a solution. I thank you for the call. It's something people should be aware of, and we are really in the early days of this so-called Internet of Things, and this is one of those Internet of Things things. An appliance connected to the Internet to give it more capabilities. But there's all sorts of issues. That's one. There's also the issue, not widely considered but serious, that any device that's connected to the internet, if it has a security flaw in it, could also be a gateway to your home network for a bad guy. And we've seen this happen with some of these devices, that they actually are allow people to get onto the device and then onto your network, that's not good either. So just, you know, I'm going to tell a story when we come back about a friend of mine, Kevin Kelly, who just wrote a really great new book about how technology is going to change our world in the future. And he had a really interesting theory about artificial intelligence. His book is called The Inevitable, and I'll tell you a little bit when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our podcast today brought to you by Wealthfront, which I love, and it's one of the few sponsors we have that I am not a client of, and there's a good reason for it in this case, SEC regulations. When Wealthfront came along, I said, oh, this is great. I want to invest. And they said, you can't, sorry, because SEC regulations prohibit customers from doing testimonials. So I'm going to do a testimonial for something I haven't tried, but that many of you have tried, and I've heard from so many people. And I have to say I have an interest in this particular subject because, like many of you, about 20, 30 years ago, I got religion on saving for my future, saving for retirement. We wanted to buy a house. I knew the kids were going to be going to college. And I knew we had to have long-term savings, but I face the same problem all of you do if you have long-term savings. If you don't, you should. How do you invest it so that that money just doesn't whittle away thanks to inflation? And putting in a savings account is not the solution. Look at the interest rates you're getting these days. It might as well be negative. It's like putting it in the mattress. Don't do either. Most people, like me, assume, well, that means I have to invest. I have to invest in stocks, bonds, real estate, something that'll have a higher growth rate. And that's where my troubles began. You hire an advisor who's going to charge you 1-2, sometimes as much as 3% of what you make. But that's going to end up, you know, every year, that's going to end up meaning you have to make that much more just to break even. That is not a good solution. And frankly, after going through a few advisors, most of them don't know that much. Otherwise, why are they working for me? If they're so smart, wouldn't they be investing for themselves and making a lot of money? Yeah. So you're going to do it yourself? I did. I read all the books and I learned as much as I could. And frankly, that worked great when I first invested it, but I didn't spend the time checking my investments, rebalancing, doing all the things you need to do. That's where Wealthfront is so awesome. First of all, Wealthfront charges you 0.25% a year. But here's the other way they're more affordable. There's no commissions, no hidden fees, no transaction fees or anything. That's it, 0.25%. And they are investing not with humans. One of the reasons they can make it so low is this is computerized investing. But they have built into the software Nobel Prize-winning academic research, the best investment practices. All you have to do is look at their board of advisors, people who wrote the books that I read, like Burton Malkiel and Charles D. Ellis. So they have a system that really, really works. The software is affordable, 0.25%. You get great investing advice, and you can see what they're doing at all times. They're monitoring your transactions constantly, not every week or month or quarter, but every day, 24/7. Look, go there right now. I'm not asking you to invest right away, although you can get started as little as $500. But I want you to read up on it. Get the portfolio analysis. They offer that for free at wealthfront.com/tech guy. They'll also generate the portfolio they would do for you based on just a few questions about your time frame and how you feel about risk and so forth. I've heard from so many fans who love this. When you do invest, they will give you not at 0.25%, but 0% for the first $15,000 forever. $15,000 free of charge for life. Invest at least that much. Wealthfront.com/tech guy. What a great idea. Wealthfront.com/tech guy. By the way, your investment advisor is terrified of Wealthfront. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to Nathan Staten, not only our musical director, but our emergency coordinator in case of fiber optic failure, the ECICOFF. That's a good title for you. You're our ECOFF. Our phone number is 818. It's just for today, 907-0062. Not toll-free, by the way. 818-907-0062. Just temporarily while we splice the fiber that was cut yesterday. So we were talking a little bit about the Hue lights and the Internet of Things. And you know what happens in inventions? And I have to give credit to Kevin Kelly, who told me this just a couple of days ago. I was interviewing about his new book, The Inevitable, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. He observed something I think is absolutely true, that when a new technology comes along, there's often a burst of innovation around it because people look at the world and say, how can we apply a thin layer of this to the world? He gives as an example that farmer who, once electrification became widespread, looked at his hand pump for, you know, his water pump and said, boy, you know, now that we have electricity, I should really electrify that. And suddenly you've got an electric pump, and that's innovation. So now, once he told me that, I thought, well, I started thinking about this, and I realized that's what's happened with the Internet, and that's what we're doing right now. We're spreading a thin layer of Internet on everything. So light bulbs is a great example. That's what those Philip Hue lights and others make these do, is they add a couple of technologies, the new ability to do multicolor LEDs, light-emitting diodes, but the most important technology, apply a thin layer of Internet to it. And that's what's going on with the Internet of Things. We're applying a layer of Internet to everything. Our glasses, our refrigerators, our microwave ovens, our light bulbs, our doorbells, and seeing what happens. And, you know, when you first start doing that, a lot of innovation, but also maybe some mistakes. Mistakes happen. Now, Kevin was bringing it up in terms of the next big thing, artificial intelligence, machine learning. And we're starting to see the very earliest days of that. We're kind of at the electricity's just becoming well-known stage. The Internet's just emerging stage. The 20 years ago, you know, 1996, when we were just all starting to get on the Internet, we're kind of at that stage with machine learning. But look what happened in 20 years. I think it might even happen faster with machine learning. Google, of course, has a lot of that, has been doing that for a decade. And they've started to say, we're going to start doing that more with apps and your phone, and we're going to make a little thing called the Google Home you can talk to. That's kind of a competitor to the Amazon Echo, which is, isn't it, after all, applying a little machine learning to a tube in your house that's listening all the time and starts and does things using Internet connectivity and intelligence, because it has to, I mean, it's not intelligence like human intelligence, machine intelligence, to kind of try to understand what it is you're asking and act upon it. Actually, it doesn't do a bad job at all. I could say, Echo, buy some toilet paper, and it will actually do that. Let me see.
I found two matching items. The first is Cottonelle Ultra Comfort Care toilet paper, double roll economy plus pack in Leo's order history. It's not Prime eligible, so I can't order it for you. Should I add it to your Amazon cart?
No.
I also found Cottonelle Ultra Comfort Care Family Roll Toilet Paper Bath Tissue. It's $22.72 total, after a discount of $1. Should I order it?
Yes.
Okay. What's Leo's voice code?
I'm not going to tell you my voice code, but you get the idea. That interaction is real. Yeah, I know, because I said forget it. I don't want toilet paper. But that's... So that's machine intelligence plus Internet applied to a microphone and a computer, and suddenly I can talk to it and order toilet paper. I mean, that seems like a trivial thing, but it's kind of an interesting, and it's just the beginning. I can also add items to my calendar, say, hey, remind me, I got a dentist appointment tomorrow, things like that. So Kevin says we're applying, and you're going to see a mass amount of innovation going on around this, applying a thin layer of machine intelligence to everything. And just like the Internet of Things, it's going to be a little dodgy at first, but I think very intriguing. And anything I, by the way, this is a brilliant idea from Amazon's point of view, because anything I've ordered before on Amazon Prime, I can order again with my voice. So what do? I'll shop more at Amazon. Makes more money for them. It makes a lot of sense. Somebody in the chat room saying, at what point do we humans become incompetent without our little helpers? Well, I don't know about you, but I've started to become a little less competent in map reading. How many times have you done this where the GPS says turn left here and you just go, okay, and I don't look at the signs anymore? I hate to tell stories about my wife, but the other day Lisa and I are going to a restaurant and she had a GPS set to take us to the restaurant. We're driving along and, you know, I was kind of not paying attention. I looked up. She's driving, not me. I looked up and we're in a parking lot. I said, where are we? Is this it? Are you taking me here to murder me? What is this? She said, the GPS told us to come here. This is not, it was a mistake. But after a while, you kind of get used to the idea that the GPS knows and I don't. And so there you go, right there. That's an answer to your question. Yes, we are a little less competent, aren't we? A little harder to figure out where we're going because we trust these devices. But I don't know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? We're living in interesting times, and the thing is, it sneaks up on us. When's the last time you went into a bank? I used to have to go to a bank all the time to get cash. Remember that? That's how you got cash? I haven't gone into a bank in ages. Ages. Things change, and they change gradually, and pretty soon you don't notice. I remember, because I'm the tech guy, I use this stuff before anybody else. I used the first Bank of America ATM more than, almost, I think it's 30 or 40 years ago, a long time ago. People thought I was crazy when ATMs first came out. Did you trust them? Well, if you're under 30, you probably have always had them, right? So there was never a question. But I can tell you, those of us who are a little older, the first time I could go to a machine in the wall of a bank and get money out of it, that was quite a revelation. It was quite amazing. Of course, the next step is, who needs cash? Cash? Don't you just tap your phone to the register? What are you talking about cash for? 8888, ask Leo. No, that's not the number. See, I'm trusting my autonomic nervous system to tell you the phone number. It's a new number, 818-907-0062. Actually, hang on the calls because Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, is coming up. We're talking a little bit about digital photography. And then when he's done, we will get back to the phones and ask some more. By the way, the new ATMs at Bank of America let you touch your Apple Watch to the ATM and spit out money. Wow. Wow. We live in interesting times. And I, for one, embrace it. More tech coming up with me, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and it's time for Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. You'll find Chris at discoverthetopfloor.com. He's a professional photographer, the author of a great new book. It's called The Film Photography Handbook. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing splendid.
Splendid?
Splendid.
Well, it is summertime, and I know that is the weather. Now, you're in, where in Germany are you?
I'm near Hanover.
Hanover.
Which is in the northern part of Germany.
So it's a little chillier there.
It's a bit more windy. It's a bit more flat here. Not that many hills and things.
But
it's
you
bit
get
more
nice
flat,
weather.
More wind.
Weather.
Oh yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Yeah, summer weather. Good.
Summer is coming up. Well, winter is over. Spring is out now, and summer's coming closer, and the sun is out, and we have a much nicer light now. You know, over the winter, it's very overcast often, and it's grayish.
Yeah, boy, I know that.
This has really changed now. Do you remember last week we talked about colors?
Yes.
We talked about how colors are kind of more strong when the sun is out and when the light is out, and how the colors are so important. The same is true for another thing about the light, and that's the direction of light.
The direction, yes.
The direction of
I've
light is really
that.
Important to make a pleasing photo. The most boring light you can imagine is the flash on your camera that goes straight from the camera into someone's face and just doesn't really cast any shadows.
It's horrible. Everybody looks terrible in a flash. Yeah. Sometimes you get their red eyes, so they look like a vampire, and their face is flattened by that bright white light. Ick.
But, with all the light around us, you have a lot of choice. I mean, where you put your subject and where you put the light or what light you use. If you don't want to use artificial light, you can use available light. So some might be coming in from a window. So if the angle that you place your subject towards, that will determine where the light will hit, from what angle the light will hit your subject. And that will in turn determine the depth you see. Like if light comes in from the side, you will get stronger textures. You will see depth in things because the shadows will be different than if you have the light coming from the front. Now, remember last week we talked about have a look outside the box. Have a look outside what you usually look at in terms of photography. And when it came to the colors, we're looking at cinema.
Yeah.
At filmmakers at Hollywood. Let's do the same thing from a color, from a lighting point of view, because there is a lot to be learned from these guys. They don't just have the colors down to a T, they have the lighting down as well.
Oh, lighting makes such a difference.
It does.
Especially for faces, especially for humans.
Oh, yeah, for faces, for humans, for everything. If you look at old paintings by the Dutch masters, Rembrandt, for example, that light, such a classic light, and that works so well with photography, and it's a single light setup. So you don't really need a lot of light, but go next time you go to the cinema, watch some movies from that perspective. How did they do the lighting? Where's the light coming from? That cinematic look that you're looking for with the colors, you will also be able to find in the lighting. Go on YouTube. Again, go on YouTube, watch a few videos that you find with the search term cinematic lighting. Cinematic lighting is so important if you really want to have a big impact now, with your light. You mean light doesn't have to come from the front or from the side. It can come from behind.
We don't want to carry around lighting equipment. I mean, they're in a movie, they've got a key light in front of you. They've got a hair light behind you to highlight your head. They got side lighting to give you modeling and shadow. What do I do if I'm just, I got my point and shoot? How do I do that?
Well, look around, because you will have a room with windows, there are doors, maybe you're outside and there are trees that cover the light from you, but then light might be coming from the side or from different directions. It's pretty much already there, so you will just have to find it. And light has different properties. I mean, we're talking about the direction of light, which is very important, but also the size of the light source. I mean, you could be standing next to a tungsten light bulb, or you could be standing next to a big wall that the sun shines at, and that will turn that into a big light source. The color of the light is another thing. You can stand next to a green wall and have your subject look really sick, or you could have just a neutral color or something warm that will just warm things up a bit. Same for the intensity of light. I mean, shoot out in the middle of the day and the light will be very intense. Shoot in the evening, an hour before sunset, and the light will be very soft, very, very low in intensity, nice and warm. So all these parameters are already there. It's already out there. All you have to do is look around. That's what I do when I have a photo shoot and I'm opting for available light. I will scout a location. I will have a look around and see if that's actually doable or if I need any additional light sources. So YouTube, cinematic lighting is a good search term.
If you're taking a picture of somebody and, move them closer to the window or,
turn them around with their back to the window and have the light just skim them from the side.
Yeah.
And that will be such a different look from what you usually get. It's amazing the amount of stuff you can do with just a little moving things around and having light come from a different direction.
I also noticed, because where you are on the globe makes a difference. We're on the probably roughly the 40th parallel, latitude, the same as you probably, right?
Yep.
And so it's kind of the temperate climates. But as you go to Scandinavia and farther north, the sunlight actually feels like it has a different quality. I know you love to go, for instance, to Iceland to take pictures. Mm-hmm. And the light is different there, isn't it?
I'll be in Norway in a few weeks from now. Up pretty high up north with the midnight sun. So we're looking at light that is very kind of like slanting. The sun being slanting just above the horizon for the entire day and night, pretty much. And you have like really warm light and really interesting light. And it will not just be that point light source of a sun. It will also kind of from underneath will hit the cloud cover and then will be reflected downwards.
Yeah, very much changes it, doesn't it? Yeah.
It is just, it's hard to take a bad photo in light like that.
Well, it makes it really much more interesting. No, I agree with you. And that's, of course, photographers also love sunrise and sunset, the magic, sometimes call it the magic hour.
Yeah, I like the sunsets more, but that has.
Why is that different? You know, I always thought you could take, you just don't want to get up in the morning.
That's because I don't want to get up in the morning.
Because it's roughly the same. I mean, it comes from a different direction, but
I've taken sunrise pictures that you will look at and go, oh, that's a sunset picture.
Yeah, you can't tell, right?
It's hard to tell.
It's just at a low level in the sky, but that's why we love sunsets. And if you were up,
sunrises, usually the air is a bit calmer. Yeah, there's not as much wind in there.
Yeah, there is a slightly different feeling. That's part of the fun of photography is noticing that stuff that you might have taken for granted before. You might feel the light is different, but not really kind of know. And when you're a photographer, you start to pay attention. I think that's maybe the biggest values of photography is.
And get some inspiration from the cinema guys.
Yeah.
They really know what they're doing.
So if you look for on YouTube for cinematic lighting, there's a bunch
cinematic
of
cinematic lighting. Yeah. Oh, lots of interesting. Lots of videos there to get some inspiration.
Originally, when we set up our studios back over in the cottage, I hired a guy from the film industry. He lit Gosford Park, which is a beautiful Robert Altman film, and a kind of a gloomy, dark film. And he really liked that natural, almost gloomy, dark lighting, not typical in television. And so our sets in the old studio.
But it was a good fit for the old cottage.
It looked good, but it was, because we had a lot of wood. You felt like you were kind of in olden days. TV, you see, it is often very flat, kind of like that flash lighting. It's fascinating. You'll find Chris and all of his photographic ideas at discoverthetopfloor.com. Find out about his workshops and his book, too, The Film Photography Handbook. And we'll talk again next week, Chris.
Talk to you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy with a peaceful, easy Sunday tech show. We have a different phone number for this show only. The fiber was cut between us and home base. So we're using the plain old telephone service down in the Sherman Oaks studios at 818-907-0062. And if I'm not mistaken, Dan's next from Murrieta, California. Hi, Dan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for hanging on.
You betcha. So I have my pride and joy. My beautiful daughter is going to be graduating high school on Friday. And we have some grandparents that are actually in North Carolina and an aunt in Greece.
Wow.
And we were trying to figure out about using my iPhone 6S Plus to stream her her presentation and all that good stuff. And then maybe what kind of directional microphone that I could also use with that iPhone.
So the good news is this is a very easy thing to do nowadays. Everybody's gotten into live video streaming. It started with Meerkat, you may remember, then Periscope, which Twitter bought, and now Facebook's doing it with Facebook Live. So you could use any of those three apps, and there's plenty of other ones as well, and just kind of use your phone to shoot. You're right, audio is going to be a bit of a challenge because the microphone and the iPhone isn't great, and it's kind of distant. But I think that's probably, without spending a lot of money and getting a lot more complex, the best you're going to be able to do. There are external microphones you can buy for an iPhone. I use one from Shure that's pretty good. It's stereo. It has a wind muff, which will help if it's outside, the graduation's outside. But it's always going to be, in your hand, so it's going to pick up what people are saying around you better than whatever's going on up by the stage. Now, if you can sit near a speaker, I don't know how big the graduation is, but that then that would work just fine. And even if the iPhone microphone probably would work just fine if you're near enough a speaker, whatever the loudest sound source is. So the one I have and I like is from Shure, but it's not inexpensive. It's called the Shure. They have a line called the Motiv, M-O-T-I-V line, and these are designed for the iPhone. They have lightning adapters. So the microphone just plugs into the bottom of the iPhone on the lightning adapter. The Motiv software lets you decide, and this is pretty important for what you want to do, how directional you want the microphone. So you can narrow it so it's kind of aiming wherever the camera on the phone is aiming. And the one I use is very compact. It's the SM88 from Shure. But I think it's, you know, I think it's close to $200. If you were going to be a, you know, the reason I have is because I'm a podcaster. And so, or I'm sorry, it's the MV, not SM, but MV88. Part of the Motiv line. And it's really, it's a great microphone. Let me see, on Amazon, $149.
Oh, that's not bad.
Not too bad. And I'll tell you, if you ever thought you were going to be recording other stuff with your iPhone, it would be worth it. So it has presets for speech, singing, acoustic instruments, loud, which the iPhone doesn't handle very well, loud sounds. So if you're at a rock concert, for instance, this would be a far preferable solution. You'll get great audio out of this. I mean, and if, you know, what might be fun is afterwards to talk to family and friends and the graduate and continue to stream all this. And your aunt in Greece can see her. And she could even, if you use Periscope, chat back at you.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. And put little heart buttons on there. So Periscope, Facebook Live's pretty cool. You know, probably everybody's on Facebook. Periscope uses Twitter, but you don't have to have Twitter to see it. You can see it on the web. So these all work quite well.
Facebook, that's the way to go, though.
Yeah, if everybody's on Facebook, man, Facebook Live's a great solution, yeah. And then, by the way, the nice thing about Facebook, unlike Periscope and Meerkat, is it stays on Facebook. So if you're Greece, if it's, you know, 3 a.m. in Greece, which it probably will be when your daughter's graduating, her aunt could get up in the morning and see it after the fact.
Well, she did say she would stay up for that.
Yeah, that's really sweet. That's really neat. Congratulations. Is that this week?
It's on Friday, yes.
Friday. That's wonderful.
So just a couple of years behind you, Leo.
Yeah, I remember the high school graduations. That wasn't so long ago, 2010 and 2012, I think. And college graduations are coming up next.
Well, she's off to college in 2 months, and I'm sure that'll go very quickly. So.
Yeah, it does. Dan, congratulations to both of you.
Thank you, Leo.
That's great. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Rob from Tarzana is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rob.
One of the most valuable things I've picked up from you, besides the knowledge itself, is the respect that you treat people with, even when they ask a question that someone else might seem, you know, feel is silly.
And I like silly questions. You know why? Because it makes me sound smart.
Yeah, right.
Easy's good. I don't have a problem with them.
Well, this might not be so easy.
Uh-oh.
I'm getting tired of all the problems. I got tired of all the problems using iTunes on my PC. Like
it's
so
a mess.
Many other people.
Yeah, it's a mess.
So I transferred my collection per your recommendation to MediaMonkey.
Great.
And MediaMonkey is fine, except, and by the way, you wouldn't believe how much smoother Windows ran when I got rid of iTunes.
Yeah. Well, there's another problem, too, which is QuickTime, which is used by iTunes to play back music, is now not being updated by Apple and is a security flaw. So Apple's recommending you uninstall QuickTime.
One more reason to stay away from
Can you
that
believe
PC.
It? Yeah, yeah.
Well, anyway, I miss using my iPod, and even with the help of a couple of programs, it's been an uphill climb to make MediaMonkey sync with my iPod.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, what portable digital players do you recommend using besides my phone with MediaMonkey?
It works with Android. So
any portable standalone players.
Boy, you know, that is a market that just closed down pretty abruptly.
Right.
iPod just dominates so much. I wonder if SanDisk still makes the Sansa, which would work with MediaMonkey. Let me just check, because that was a pretty decent MP3 player. And SanDisk, yeah, they still do, and you can still buy it on Amazon. Well, discontinued. Oh,
yeah.
You can buy it. There, some people still have it in stock. SanDisk, of course, makes the memory for these guys, and right. So really, right. what they were interested in is selling memory.
You know what my concern was with carrying using. I have an Android phone, by the way, and my concern with using that is. If I'm holding it, like, you know, in my pocket or next to my chest while I'm working out, is there a concern about a smartphone next to my body because of radiation?
I think not, but that's a long question. We're going to take a break for news. I'm gonna let you go, but keep listening because I will address this. This is something we probably should talk about because there is another report about the dangers of cell phone radiation. I think it's inconclusive, but you should know the facts, and we'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by Tunnel Bear. I probably don't have to tell a lot of you about Tunnel Bear. You probably all have heard of it. You know, when did Tunnel Bear really break out? There was a show, maybe it was Downton Abbey or Game of Thrones or something, where you could watch it if you were in England. But you couldn't watch it if you were in the U.S., and everybody was using Tunnel Bear to do it. Tunnel Bear is a VPN. It's kind of the easiest to use and best VPN, and it has all of the advantages of a VPN. So one of the advantages is you can watch shows that are geographically restricted because you don't have to look like you're coming from the United States. Tunnel Bear lets you look like you're coming from a big variety of countries. In fact, it's easy to use. You choose a country in the app, you turn on Tunnel Bear, and your bear is tunneling out through the internet. But there's even a more important value to Tunnel Bear. It protects your privacy. It gives you a secure connection. If you're in an open Wi-Fi access point, if you're in a hotel, even if you're at home and you're worried about your internet service provider watching what you're doing, it's very easy to use. There's no messing around with port configurations, no DNS changes. You don't have to change your router at all. It does that all in the background. And I love this because they give you 500 megabytes of free data every month. You don't have to give them a credit card, so you'll never be billed. So if you just need I need a cup of VPN, please. This is great. Everybody should have this account. Go to trytunnelbear.com/techguy. Trytunnelbear.com/techguy. And then if you need more, you could pay for more. Of course, it's, you know, AES 256-bit encryption, and it eliminates geo-blocking, hides your location, shields all your traffic from third parties, hackers, local networks, your internet service provider. Very important, you should always check this. They do not log user activity at all. So top-rated privacy policy, and they do not log user activity. 20 different countries. And it's free for the first 500 megabytes every month, which really means you just should install this and have it for when you need it. Try TunnelBear.com/TechGuy. TunnelBear is a simple privacy app for mobile and desktop browsing. Try TunnelBear.com/TechGuy. Get your free account today. And if you want more, you can buy more. But it's very handy. Very handy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, and cell phone radiation danger. Our phone number is a little different today because of a fiber cut down the road a piece, disconnecting us from the outside world. Well, I guess we're still connected, but you can't call the phone number, so it's 818, today only, 818-907-0062. That is not a toll-free number. It is a call to Southern California, our Sherman Oaks facility, 818-907-0062, and Michael's down there answering the phones, and Nathan Staten, and they'll relay it back up to me. I wanted to address this cell phone thing because, once again, there are headlines, and I tell you, did you see John Oliver a couple of weeks ago talking about the very, very sad state of science reporting in television and mainstream media? It does, you know, and no wonder people are confused because, you know, scientific studies are hard to interpret. And then very often a press release is written which misinterprets the scientific study. And then somebody who's not a scientist reads the press release and writes his news story up designed to get more ratings or more clicks. And By the time it gets to us, what we're reading is inaccurate and inflammatory, almost always. And if you haven't seen it, I think it's on YouTube. Just look for John Oliver and Scientific Studies, and I think you'll get a sense of this. So let's talk about cell phone use. Is it dangerous, is the question. And, of course, the scientific study that you probably saw in the last 4 days, a study with rats, not by a cancer researcher, by a toxicologist, that right there is a little bit of a red flag because he wasn't looking for causes, or he was basically exposed rats to the level of cell phone radiation that we are normally exposed to day in, day out. It would be a reasonable amount for somebody who owns a cell phone. He had a control group of rats that weren't exposed. The rats exposed to the cell phone in this study, $25 million study, by the way, the government spent some money on this. The group of rats that were exposed to the cell phone did develop cancers at a higher rate. All lab rats apparently develop cancer. It's not unusual, but a slightly higher rate, a non-malignant type of cancer in the heart and a malignant type of cancer in the brain and glioma. It was an interesting study because the other interesting piece of information, the rats that weren't exposed to the radiation died sooner on average than the rats that were. So I guess from this study you could conclude two things, that cell phone radiation might cause cancer in rats, and two, cell phone radiation helps rats live longer. In other words, now here's some better studies of human beings, and there's quite a few of them. If you go to cancer.gov and read their page on cell phone and cancer risk, they quote probably studies that mean a little bit more, like the Danish study of 358,000 cell phone subscribers with brain tumor incidence data from the Danish Cancer Registry. They got this information from billing information, not from self-reporting. By the way, that's an important point because a lot of times people either under or over-report their cell phone use. This information on cell phone use came from billing information. The study showed no association between cell phone use and the incidence of glioma, meningioma, or acoustic neuroma, even among people who had been cell phone subscribers for 13 or more years. A million woman study in the UK using self-reported cell phone use not associated with an increased risk of cancer. Maybe even more to the point, mortality and incidence of brain cancer in the U.S. has not changed significantly in 10 years. If cell phones caused brain cancer, you would expect to see some sort of statistical increase in brain cancer over the last 10 years when cell phone use has soared over the last 10 years, right? No. Furthermore, no one has been able to prove a mechanism for the kind of radiation that comes from the cell phone radios and cancer. There's no current thinking about how that might cause cancer. It's it's radiation. It must cause cancer kind of thinking. But there's no link. So I recommend that you go to cancer.gov and read their cell phones and cancer risk page. I think it's well written. You know, the World Health Organization a couple of years ago said, even though there's no evidence, we're going to act as if there is some danger. I think you got to trust the science on this one. And I don't mean these small rat studies. I mean the long, large studies, the million woman study in Britain, the Danish study with 358,000 subscribers, the Interphone study, the largest health-related case control study of cell phone use and the risk of head and neck tumors conducted by a consortium of researchers from 13 countries, no statistically significant increases in brain or central nervous system cancers related to higher amounts of cell phone use. It's pretty straightforward. There is no evidence. There is no link. Be prudent if you want. I think one of the things I notice is we don't spend as much time on the phone as we used to. You know, sometimes I see people use earbuds that are plugged into the phone saying, I don't want to put that phone near my head. Well, you know, just so you know, the earbuds are acting like an antenna, taking that radio energy and pumping it right into your ear. So that's not really going to make it any better. It's the problem really is that scientific studies and information like this is so misreported in the mainstream media. You just can't trust it. You just can't trust it. And, you know, they're for a variety of reasons. You know, ignorance of science is one. Desire to improve ratings and clicks is another. Don't worry about it, in other words. Carry that cell phone anywhere you want. Use it as much as you want. I think the biggest one for me is no statistical increase in cancers of that kind over the last 10 years. Or mortality, for that matter, over the last 10 years. I think you'd see that, wouldn't you? We'll talk, you know, if you disagree, if you're, you know, an expert in this subject, love to hear from you. There's a, you know, a lot of questions about it. I agree. Leo on the line from Buena Park, California. We lost him earlier, but he's back again. Hi, Leo.
Hi, Leo. ¿Cómo te va?
Ça va bien. Et tu?
Hey, Leo, Scott yesterday didn't mention the sound system of a Super Audio CD, which I have.
Limited, yes.
Software, but it's a great way to listen to an album.
I agree.
If you've ever heard of Dark Side of the Moon?
Yeah.
On,
SACD Audio, is amazing. Yeah. I have Jeff Lynne's War of the Worlds in SACD. It's beautiful.
I've been waiting so long. I wrote down what I want to talk to you about. I want to ask you, an analogy of buying a 4K TV would be like buying a Mustang that has 1,000 horsepower, but you can only get the 1,000 horsepower by buying jet fuel from NASA. And you know, jet fuel from NASA is probably $500 a gallon.
Yeah.
So buying one of those now, because I hooked up a outside antenna to a 4K television and watched a live broadcast of the news on my local channels here, and the picture was terrible.
Yeah, so that's one problem. We saw, you know, by the way, we've been through this once before with a change to HD, to high def. And when HD first came out, there were very few HD sources of content, and mostly you were watching SD, standard definition, on your HD set, and all of a sudden you saw many, many more flaws because you had a better set. Same thing's going to happen with 4K. But I also think HD came along, and I think 4K will come along. There's just no urgency today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. No. That's such a habit. I got to get out of it. For today only, 818-907-0062. We've got a special number because, it's a long story. Phone lines were cut. By the way, we got a notice. They're splicing as fast as they can. It was a fire, I guess, electrical fire in the fiber optic cable between us and the big central office down the peninsula in Northern California was cut. 216 lines of glass. That's a lot of fiber. That's a ton of fiber severed. That means they have to splice it together. It's a non-trivial thing to do to splice fiber together. So it takes time. They've been working now for more than 15 hours. They say in a few hours it'll be fixed. So, wow. So that's like 18 hours of splicing to get this thing working again. Ralph, Huntington Beach. Hey, Ralph. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My son and I are looking for an alternative to regular TV service, Verizon, which is now Frontier, or AT&T, something like that.
So many people are very upset. Did you get moved from Verizon to Frontier?
Yeah, we did.
Ugh. I've heard from so many people.
We were upset before the move anyway. So I was wondering if I heard about VStream 2 and Smart Stream or Stream Smart. And I was wondering if you had any experience with those.
Yeah, so I don't, but I can tell you what I think, which is this is not a great idea. So let me look up. Is this? I believe this is one of a number of people saying you get, quote, cable TV over the internet. Is that what they're doing?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. What is the source of the channels that they're bringing you?
There's a whole slew of them, apparently. And
I would look really carefully about what you're getting. So I don't know specifically about these ones that you mentioned, but this is, I don't want to say scam, but it's a little misrepresenting it, and they've been around for some time. It turns out that globally, a lot of television networks provides their signal over the internet. And so companies have sprung up to aggregate these signals. But what you're going to get is soccer from Ecuador and Spanish language programming from Mexico. It's not going to be, and this is what you want to look. Are you going to get ESPN? Are you going to get your local channels? Are you going to get network television? And that's the question, the hard question you must ask. And if you are, then that means they're paying a lot of money for that. And you're going to have to pay them equivalent to what you're paying your cable company. This comes over the internet, or it comes through the air to you? Here, I'm looking right now. All right, VStream. I'm looking at VStream. VStream compares itself to Roku and Amazon, which makes sense. Because that's kind of what they are, is internet streaming boxes. They have on their website, they have a bunch of green check marks next to all the extra stuff they get. Netflix and Hulu, Amazon Instant Video, all of that stuff's good. YouTube, HBO Go, Showtime, anytime, watch ESPN, that's what you want. What I'd be careful about is the presumption that you could get, and I see they have it here, live TV content, 200,000 movie titles, live events and sports content. A lot of that stuff is just stuff that's over the internet. They're just aggregating it anyway. You're not going to replace your cable channels with it, basically, is what I'm saying. You're not going to get your local news. You're not going to get the Academy Awards or the Super Bowl. You're not going to get the premium stuff. There are companies that do this. Sling is one. Sling offers, though, at $20 a month, no local channels. They just offer ESPN and Disney. So this is the problem. We're in this kind of period right now where companies like ABC, CBS, and NBC are very nervous about internet distribution. For two reasons. One, they want to make sure that they're going to be able to make as much money as they have been. Two, they don't want to really annoy the cable companies. Because right now, the gateway for almost all of these players into your house is through cable. And if I remember when I worked for Tech TV, a cable channel called Tech TV, we had very strict contracts about what we could put on the internet because, you know, Comcast doesn't want us to go end around them and start putting our content on the internet. So it's very, very few networks will put their content on the internet without the cooperation and acceptance of the cable companies. For example, you can buy HBO Now. What is it, $10 a month, $15 a month? You can buy ESPN via Sling. So there are a few things, but these are channels that are so powerful that imagine if Frontier or Comcast or Time Warner came to you and said, oh, by the way, we're not going to carry HBO anymore because we don't like how they're doing this HBO Now, they'd lose some business. So channels that are coming to you over the internet are few and far between. Hulu is an example. It was a joint venture of a number of Fox and I think NBC. And they fought over, well, how much should we offer? What should we offer? Can we put ads in it? How much can we charge? We're still in a rough period of time. So I'm not going to specifically recommend or disrecommend any company, but look very carefully on their website and see what you get. And if they're not explicit, for instance, about the local channels that you're getting, then I'd be a little suspicious. VStream looks very much like, it's an Android TV device. That means it's going to be able to bring you anything that's on the internet. And that's that. and that probably isn't your local station. Now, if you get live local over your antenna, the best, you know, then you've got the best of both worlds. If you can get over the air broadcasts, and you can watch your local news and your broadcast television for free over the internet, and then or over the air, and then add internet channels with a box like this, or Android TV, or Fire TV, Roku. I like Roku. I think Roku is pretty close to the broadest range of stuff. Roku has a lot of hidden channels. There's several thousand channels on Roku that probably cover every base that any other system is going to cover. They've been around for the longest and so forth. So I would, you know, and I'm looking at the checkboxes on this VStream TV site, for instance, and some of them are just wrong. So, for instance, they say the Roku doesn't, and Apple TV don't do Wi-Fi. Oh, I see. They say don't do 4K on Wi-Fi. Well, Apple TV doesn't do 4K at all. Actually, the boxes that do 4K are very limited. VStream might be all right. I don't know how much it is. But just don't assume that you're getting locals. That's the real issue. That's and that's where maybe if you had it over the air, that would work. That might do it. Hey, thank you for the call. We're going to take more calls. Half an hour to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I don't see anywhere on VStream where they say what channels they get. This looks like it is an Android TV box. So, you know, I like Android TV. But it's not going to be anything different than Android TV. I use the NVIDIA Shield, and I can tell you right now, the variety is not amazing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. A really special thanks today to Nathan Staten, our musical director, of course, still picking great tunes, but also managing this phone situation, and to Michael, who came in today for training and instead is getting a crash course in call screening due to phone line issues up here in Northern California. They're taking over down in Southern California today, and they've done a great job. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. I think we were talking a little bit about this whole idea of, what, you know, really what is a transition, I think, to IPTV, internet television. And we're in this transitional phase, so it's kind of a mess right now. But I think Comcast and Time Warner and all the cable companies have seen this coming for years. Years ago, they used to say, I remember a Cablevision executive telling me this, we just can't make enough money as an internet-only company. We need, our business model's based on selling you premium channels, selling you cable television. That's how we, you know, built this business. Well, that was years ago, and I think they knew that internet television was coming. And so what have they done? They've slowly increased the cost of the internet. And ultimately, what's going to happen is you're not going to save any money being a cord cutter. That's what they call it. People who cancel their cable subscription and say, I'm going to get all my TV either over the air, if you're lucky if you can do that, or through the internet. I'm going to put up with losing some features of, you know, my cable television, like live local, and but I'm going to survive and I'm going to save money, right? No. I mean, it just, you do the math, and time again, when you add up the high-speed internet you need, 60 or 70 bucks a month in many cases, and then the 10 bucks and 15 bucks a month for ESPN and HBO or whatever you get, it's going to be pretty much the same. I don't think you're going to save money. So I think if you do, you might save a few bucks, but really the reason people become cord cutters is mostly, I think, because they hate the cable companies. It just feels good not to have to deal with them anymore. The goal, of course, is what users want is just the shows I want. Why am I paying for bundles for channels I never watch? Why am I paying for shows I'll never watch? I want to see Game of Thrones. I want to see Shades of Blue. Whatever it is, the five shows, Live with Kelly and whoever. I want that, and I don't want anything else. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just say, and I'll pay, here's what I'll do. I'll pay a buck a month for those shows, and you'd have your 10 shows or whatever. That's how it should be, but it's not going to ever be that way. Remember the record industry? What they were most afraid of was that Apple would come along and start selling singles. The whole record industry was built on you have to buy the whole CD. Even if you like one song, you got to buy the CD. Yeah, they had singles, but they kind of phased those out. They were making good bang. And so many groups were putting out albums that had one or two good songs, and the rest of it was just filler. That's how they made their money. And then Apple, you know, because of their clout in the marketplace, Apple was able to say, nope, we're going to sell 99-cent singles and too bad. And users love it. Wasn't so great for the record industry, but users, that's what we want. We want a la carte. And, of course, that's less money for the big companies. But when content creators say, oh, no, we need the money, you got to... That's fine. I think we're willing to pay for Game of Thrones. I think we're willing to pay for those special shows. And I think ultimately, if you're a content creator, that's how you want to do it. Your job is to build enough fans that they'll pay you directly. Same thing with a band, musicians, artists. The ideal, wouldn't it be, is just to, you know, build a big audience and have them pay you directly for your music. Eliminate the middleman. Part of the reason that can happen is because you don't need the middleman as much anymore. In the music industry, you had to have the money to pay for studio time. It was hideously expensive, hundreds of thousands of dollars just to make an album. You needed the promotional clout because the record label will take your single to DJs at radio stations, say, pay it, play it, please. And, of course, you need somebody to make those vinyl discs and put them out in a truck and drive it over to the record store. Well, you don't need any of that anymore. If you're a musician, you can go direct to the audience through the internet. You can record on your laptop. So all of the things that the publishers, record labels, television networks brought to the table, the internet's kind of changed that. And so I think for content creators, it's a golden age. For consumers, it could be a golden age, except we still have those middlemen holding on for dear life. They do not want to be taken out of the equation. We might want it. The content creators might even want it. The middlemen don't. And middlemen, you know, they hang on. They hang on. 8888, 818-907-0062. That's the number for today only. Chris in San Marcos. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Chris.
First-time caller, big fan. How you doing?
I am great. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I've got a question, but first I have a comment about something you were just talking about, internet TV.
Yeah.
I've got a Stream Smart Box, and I am a huge fan.
Good. All right. I don't know them, and that's one of the things our caller was asking about. Stream Smart.
Yep.
Tell me about it.
Okay. I've got 10 megabit DSL Extreme.
Yeah.
And so, you know, not huge fast internet, and it runs just great. Right now, on my TV, I have muted Twit TV, You on the Screen, episode 1294, Sunday, the 5th of June, 2016.
Mm-hmm. That's the show that's on right now.
Yeah, exactly. I can see real live TV. I can get network TV. Now, you know, you see commercials with network TV, but hey, they got to make a buck too. I get that.
Are you getting over-the-air stuff like Channel 7, that kind of thing? Or
no. Well, okay. That's kind of interesting. I can find local Channel 5, New York City, and other things. So I could potentially find my channel on that.
And they put that over the air. You don't pay a subscription fee for this, or do you?
No. $300 box. It's basically kind of
it's
like
Kodi. It's a Kodi box. So anybody who's familiar with Kodi, which used to be XBMC, this is a smart media program that a lot of people build their own Kodi computers. If it's powerful enough, that's a reasonable price. It seems a little pricey.
Well, I didn't want to dedicate a PC to it.
Right. I mean, and that would have cost you more anyway, right? Yeah.
You could dedicate an old laptop, you know, put a SSD drive
in
it.
Sure, you could do this yourself, but they're doing it for you.
Yeah, you can do this yourself. You can run Kodi. I just did this for... Well, what you won't get with that is the fact that Kodi, or the StreamSmart, has a remote control.
Yeah.
You can also get a phone app that's a Wi-Fi remote control. And so I just sit on the couch with my phone and surf through channels.
So this is basically internet TV, and it has all the pros and cons of internet TV. They're selling a box that makes it easy, you know, more like an appliance, but it's not going to have any more features than any other internet television service. It's a streaming computer, basically.
Yeah, but what I get with it,
I'll have to get one of these, because you've sold me on it. StreamSmart.tv.
Yeah, and now for your listeners, it's not like cable TV. You can't. I said the word I surf. Well, you can't surf through the channels with a remote control regular TV.
Right.
You have to find a Kodi app that has the things that you want to view.
And Twit is on our podcast network. Is on Kodi. I'm happy to say it broke for a little while, but somebody's come along and fixed it, which is nice.
Watching it right now.
Yeah.
In fact, they just ran your. I just saw a Stream Smart. Maybe there's a delay.
Yeah, I'm showing the website. That's why you're seeing it right now.
Hey,
I got to take a break. I know you have another question, so hang on, okay? We're going to take a break and come back with more. But, yeah, so this is for people who are listening who've ever put a media center on a computer, that's what this is, but they've appliancized it to make it easier for you. You don't have to know what you're doing. It's a standalone box. StreamSmart.tv. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think you could get it cheaper, but there's an advantage to having it done kind of automatically. Oh, this uses illegal torrents too, huh? That's interesting. It turns out the Kodi folks aren't really crazy about these guys. The piracy box sellers and the YouTube promoters are killing Kodi. When I say these guys, I mean people like Streamcast TV. So they modify Kodi, install broken piracy add-ons, advertising that Kodi lets you watch free movies and TV. Yeah. I don't know if this is one of them, but it's something to be aware of, is people bundling Kodi kind of inappropriately. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking high tech for a few more minutes. We had started talking to Chris in San Marco and got a little derailed by this StreamSmart TV, but I'm glad to have that recommendation. What else can I do for you, Chris?
Okay. I'm looking at the Tiny Hardware Firewall.
Yeah.
And
I recommend. I love this thing.
Yeah. I saw your review on their webpage.
Yeah.
Now, they sell this for the hardware for $30, which I think is incredible. And then their VPN client is $91 plus a little change a year, which is also a pretty incredible price. Now, I noticed on your review that you can run their VPN client or Tor. Can you...
They're different things. So you can do VPN alone or VPN plus Tor.
Ah, okay.
So what Tor does is anonymizes you. I think people sometimes think that a VPN is an anonymous system. It's not. So,
okay, so you're running Tor through their VPN client.
Right.
Okay. I wondered what the advantage of their VPN client versus Tor, but I get it.
Now, the advantage of Tiny Hardware Firewall is its hardware, which means you don't have to install any software on any of your systems. It becomes a wireless Wi-Fi access point. You configure it, and now it's taking the internet access from your hotel or the coffee shop, putting it through their hardware, and then you're joining the network on their hardware. So once you set up the hardware, it's easy. Your phone or your laptop, up to 5 devices, they don't have to be running any VPN software. They don't even know they're on a VPN or Tor. They just think they're on a Wi-Fi access point. And then it routes the traffic through the VPN or through Tor or both.
Right.
So
now, will that...
The disadvantage, that's the advantage. The disadvantage is it only uses, I think it uses Hotspot VPN as your only choice for a VPN. You don't get to choose different VPNs.
Yeah, I didn't like that, but the price isn't bad. So
yeah, in fact, I got the Hotspot VPN, I got the hardware for free because I subscribed to Hotspot VPN for a year at $91. So maybe they've started charging more for the Tiny Hardware Firewall. It's pretty cool. But it is one of many solutions. And in fact, they're just reselling a piece of hardware that comes from... Oh, yeah, they now charge you, don't they? They didn't used to charge you for the hardware. They're now just selling. I mean, you could get this particular hardware and have it configured for a different VPN, I would guess. I mean, this is just, but the convenience of this is great. And this, it is, in fact, what I use when I go to a hotel or I'm out in the public using an open Wi-Fi access point. It really is dangerous to use open access points without some sort of VPN protecting you.
I like to watch what kind of traffic is going on around me.
Yeah, if you ever do that, you know what's possible, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to balance carefully whether I want to scare people. I don't want to scare people. But I also want them to be aware of risks. And so there are some risks to using open Wi-Fi. I mean, I'd be careful about what you do on there. Careful about what access point you're joining. Make sure it really is the coffee shops and not some bad guy sitting in between you and the coffee shop, things like that. But if you're banking, if you're buying on Amazon, if you're on an HTTPS secured site, and most sites are nowadays, you have most of the benefits of a VPN. Those are encrypted conversations. They know you're going there, but they don't know what you're doing once you're there. I think these are good solutions as long as you understand what you're getting, and it does make it a lot simpler. A lot simpler. Cody, I guess, is a little nervous about some of these solutions, these stream boxes, because Cody says what some people are doing, and I don't know if the one you're talking about did this, what some people are doing is taking Cody's software and modifying it so you can get pirated torrents and so forth. And I think sometimes consumers are buying these boxes, and I don't know if StreamSmart is one of them, but are buying these boxes and not realizing they're actually using pirated channels, pirated shows, things like that. Maybe they don't care, but it's probably reasonable to be aware of that. And I would actually go to the Cody site and use hardware that they recommend. I'm sure Cody, which is KODI.TV, has sponsors that make, like WeTech, that make hardware that supports Cody that doesn't, you know, do these kind of sketch things with it. WeTech, WETEK.com, is a sponsor of Cody and makes a box very similar that does many of the same things, just not the pirated stuff. I think we're almost out of time. Let's see if we can get Aaron on from Placentia, California. Hi, Aaron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry?
They just dropped.
Oh, Aaron, we lost. Do we have Brett?
Yes.
Hey, Brett.
Hey,
from.
Can you hear me?
Well, yes. Who's this?
Oh, thank God. Hi, Leo. First of all, I love you.
I love you too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brett.
Quick.
No, that's fine. You got 3 minutes.
Okay. I need a recommendation for a camera. I just launched a business at the end of last year. I hard coded the site, so all developers give me a break.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank
that's
you.
Great.
I bootstrapped it. I did.
What's
everything.
The business?
It's art jewelry and greeting cards of cats and dogs. It's petsadelic.com.
I love the name.
I passed every Google muster test.
Pets. Pets. How do you spell petsadelic?
PETSADELIC.com, and I manufacture in the U.S.
Nice.
Thank you.
It's cats and dogs. Oh, you know what? This is my wife. I'm gonna don't tell my wife about this. She's a cat lover. Oh, this is great stuff.
And I did everything. All the art, the jewelry, everything.
Isn't that great? This is why I love the internet era. You can create your own storefront.
I know. So thank you. So I need a camera because the pictures are not. I'm using this little 8, you know, megapixel GE thing, and it's not working.
Oh, yeah.
And I bootstrapped it. So please.
So you don't want to spend a lot of money because, you know, and you're right. I'm looking at the picture. When I blow it up, it's a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
Doesn't reflect that very well.
No. It's great on a phone, by the way, and a tablet. It's perfect.
Yeah, of course, because it's smaller resolution.
Right.
Any point-and-shoot would do better, by the way. Even a better camera phone would do better. But what will help also, and you can Google this, they're eBay seller guides. I know you're not selling on eBay. You're selling direct. But they're guides for people who are putting stuff on eBay on how to photograph the objects. And a lot of times you can buy them on eBay or other sites. They get a box that has diffused lighting. For jewelry, you know, the problem, you don't want glare on it, but you want it cleanly lit, right?
Yes.
You want a nice backdrop. You probably want seamless backdrop. So all of that, it's easy. You can build it yourself or you can buy it. They're cheap. They're a little photo box that have lights that, but a diffuser to make it soft light. And then any camera, but you want a little tripod like a Joby, they're cheap $30 tripod that you sits on. And any camera is going to, a point and shoot is going to do a great job on this. You know, I like the Canon Elf cameras. Yeah, they're just great cameras. They're very compact. You'll use it in every other circumstance, but it'll also be great for this.
Okay.
So you want a light tent, you know, it's called a light tent or a light box to get the lighting right. And then you want this camera and you want it on a tripod. You don't want to hand hold it.
Right. I have a light box. I mean, believe it or not,
oh, good.
I bootstrapped it. I made one myself and then
Perfect.
I bought another one.
Perfect. Oh, so you know that already. It's yeah. This all comes from the photo guides on, you know, how to sell on eBay. It's the same idea, right? Because you're selling, you know, and you want to have a nice picture. You want people to look at that and go, oh, that dog is so cute. I want to buy that dog. So just any good point and shoot. But I like the Canon Elf cameras a lot. They're really great. Hey, good luck with your business, Brett. Thank you for calling. Thank you all for listening. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.